Calling all small firm architects. It's time to tap into your full potential with Entree Architects Context and Clarity, where inspiration meets innovation. Hey, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my two favorite co-hosts, Jeff Eccles and Katie Kangas, as they bring together authors, experts, and thought leaders for electric conversations with entrepreneur architects around the globe. It's not just a podcast. It's a community where dreams meet action.
There's a simple equation there. And what for me, what that did, just doing that basic calculation, was it allowed me to compare what I had actually saved in my retirement accounts to what I thought a possible projected annual spend might be.
Artists are temperamental, so beautiful design is going to be a priority. When the job is done, we're going to actually need to live in the house, not live with the person who designed it. And so for me, the artistic skill, the architectural skill is most important. And so I would say like that would be 60% of it, if not more.
Gain insights to build a successful practice. Subscribe, engage, and let's redefine your future together. Join the Context and Clarity community, where every conversation adds to your blueprint for success. Entrepreneur Architect Podcast, episode 32. Welcome to this episode of the Entrepreneur Architect Podcast. My name is Mark R. LePage, and this is the podcast dedicated to a successful life as a small firm architect. My goal is to inspire you to build a better business so that you may pursue your purpose with passion and live the life of your dreams. This week on the Entrepreneur Architect Podcast, I am turning things over to you, the Entrepreneur Architect community. Every day I receive emails from members of the community. Many are letters of support and encouragement, and truthfully, those are the emails that inspire me to continue this thing and to grow Entrepreneur Architect into everything that it can be. So I thank you. Thank you so much for sending those messages. But many other emails contain questions for me, you know, asking for advice or asking me to guide them through the right direction in their careers. You know, now I'm just a small firm architect building the best business that I can. I've learned a lot in my 20 years since graduating, and I love to share what I know. But I'm not an expert in everything business. I only know what I know. But if my writing or my voice here on the podcast can help inspire you to build a better business or live a better life or help to strengthen our profession, well, then I'm all in. So today on the podcast, I'm sharing a few questions from the community, and I'll give you my thoughts on each. My hope here is to start a dialogue over on the blog where we can all contribute and share our thoughts on each question. The post for this episode can be found at entrearchitect.com/episode32. So let's get started. So the first question I have today is a question that was sent to me by my friend Katie. I met Katie at the AIAS Forum, which is the National Convention for the Architecture Students. I spoke at Forum in Chicago in December, and Katie stopped me after my speech to ask me a few questions and pick my brain a little bit. And I had a nice conversation. And this past week, she sent me an email and asked me a question about her education. And so this is what she wrote. What would you say would be the best 3 or 4 basic business classes to take for my future architecture career? And I think that is an excellent question that students should be asking. And here are my thoughts. I think, you know, that's actually one of the main reasons I launched Entrepreneur Architect, was because I recognized the lack of attention the business of architecture received in architecture schools. And we all need a place to learn the basics of business so we can build strong firms and focus on the things that we really love to do. If we build strong businesses, then we can focus on the architecture more. So that's why I started Entrepreneur Architect. So what I would say to answer Katie's question, there's three that I have. The first one, without any doubt, is accounting. Accounting 101, a basic accounting course. You need to learn how money flows in and out of business. You need to understand the basic financial statements, the balance sheet, the profit and loss statement, and how to prepare and maintain an annual budget. Those are things that are critical to the success of any business. So I would say Accounting 101 would be my first class I'd sign up for. The second one, and this is also a very important one and very near and dear to my heart, is entrepreneurism. Many colleges and universities now offer courses on entrepreneurism. You need a course that can help you to understand how business plans are put together, how to develop a business plan, what should go in a business plan, and the importance of the basics of running a small business, the importance of branding and why branding is important for every architect, how sales work, and that sales are critical, that everybody is selling. Even architects need to sell, and to understand the techniques and the way that sales work and the way the sales that don't work, because there's certainly a way to do sales that doesn't really work. And marketing is also a very important subject that needs to be taught and learned by architecture students. You're going to start your own firm or not, these courses would help you be a better architect, would make you be a better employer to an architect. So the second one is an entrepreneur class. I actually took in 2005, I took a course at my community college called the Academy of Entrepreneurial Excellence. And that was a 15-week course that taught me everything I needed to know about business. It was a course on the fundamentals of business, and it was 15 weeks long, and every week it would be a new subject. And every week I would check to see how I was doing in my own firm. And it was a really good lesson. All the things that I was already doing were reinforced, and the things that I wasn't doing, like sales, I wasn't doing sales at all. You can go back to a previous episode about my sales system, and I could talk to you about how I learned to do sales. Those are things that course was something that shifted my entire business. It took it from sort of a stagnant, struggling firm to a thriving firm. And so the second one would be entrepreneurism. And my third one would be public speaking, and communications is also important. You know, learning to write properly, but that's not one of my three. I would say that's certainly important. It's amazing what I read on the internet, written by all sorts of people, including architects, who just don't know how to write. It's shocking to me that people graduate from college and don't really understand the basics of grammar and spelling. But that's sort of a rant for another day. The public speaking is certainly something that is important for an architect. Every architecture student clearly understands that going through the critique process, and understanding how to speak in front of an audience is so important. A good course on public speaking could take your entire career to a new level. It would help you present yourself in front of an employer when you're trying to get a job. It would help you present your work to your project managers when you become an intern. It'll help you as an architect to pitch your ideas to your clients. To know how to speak in front of an audience is so important. And I'm not talking about the type of course that's sort of thrown in as an elective, where everybody's kind of hanging out, listening to each other talk for an hour and waste a course on your just to get your credit. I'm talking about a public speaking course taught by a professor or a teacher who is passionate about public speaking, who will teach you the importance of public speaking and the techniques and the strategies and the body language and the things that take, you know, separate amazing public speakers from common public speakers or horrible public speakers. You know, as Entrepreneur Architect grows, that's something that I'm certainly going to focus on. I'm planning in the future, as Entrepreneur Architect grows, to get more training on public speaking, because I certainly, as you can tell, you know, I'm just, again, a small firm architect trying to make a difference, and I'm not trained in public speaking. But it's something that I certainly want to improve. So I'm going to find a coach or a good course on public speaking and do that. So I want to do is I want to make this thing the best it possibly can be. And we're far from that right now, but I'm working on it. And so that hopefully inspires you. So those are the three I would say for every architecture student out there. I think the three basic courses that really you should look at as a requirement are accounting, entrepreneurism, and public speaking. Those are my three. So that's the first question. My next question is from Sherry. And Sherry downloaded the course and the document templates for our hybrid proposal for architectural services. It's the agreement between owner and architect that we developed for my own firm, Five Cat Studio. And it's available for purchase at entrearchitect.com/hybrid. If you want to purchase a copy for yourself, it's about an hour and a half long course, and I go through the entire process of how the proposal is put together, which is, we call it a hybrid because it's part proposal and part agreement. It's one document that you send out as your proposal, and then if they want to work with you, they just sign that and send it back, and it becomes your agreement. So you cut out a step, make it easier for your clients to hire you. It also is a hybrid fee, which it's a stipulated sum fee based on a percentage, and it's pretty simple to understand. But I'll let you buy the course to understand how it works. Or there's actually other podcasts, and I've written about it as well. That if you didn't want to buy the course, you can search hybrid proposal on the blog, and you can find some more information on it there. Because I want to get right to the question here. Sherry sent me the following email. She wrote, "I recently purchased the hybrid proposal course. It is great. Thanks." Thanks, Sherry. "I'm new to the renovation game. I've always done new construction homes, and this course will prove very helpful on a project I am currently trying to get. One question remains. How could I use this form of proposal given this situation?" And then she described the situation she's in. "The client bought a house less than 1 year ago. It's outdated and it needs a total facelift and maybe an addition. He wants to hire me for the full project, but wants to implement it in $100,000 chunks in 2 year increments. My intuition tells me that he will end up doing the full project all at once and finance it, but that's not what he says. I'd like to complete the preliminary design for the full project, then complete each phase as he needs it. Do you recommend this? What would you do? And how would you charge for it?" So absolutely. This is a scenario that happens very often in our firm. Our market is very large residential additions and alterations. That's what we do at Five Cat Studio. And that scenario happens a lot, where a client comes in and has bigger dreams than their pocketbook. And they want us to do a, you know, preliminary master plan that kind of describes the whole project and basically renovate the whole house and the different parts of their ideas. And then they want to just start with phase one. And then when they're ready, they'll save for some more and they'll do phase two and three and four. And so that is something that we do often. And the hybrid proposal certainly can accommodate that. And so what we do is we prepare the agreement based on the entire project description. That's the first thing we do. And we send it out. So in the proposal, there's a section for the project description, and we describe that we understand that it's an entire project that's phased, and we describe that in the description. And then we start once we're hired, we would start the process as a full complete project. And so we would design the whole thing as if it was a one finished project. And then we would work with the client to figure out what the phases are, you know, and how they would want to accomplish it. And the way the proposal works is that at the end of schematic design, we get an estimate from a third party, typically a contractor who would bid the project later in the process. And we get that third party estimate and we base our fee on that estimate. So that's how it works. So now you don't have to go search for it. How it works is we do schematic design. We get an initial payment up front. So we have some money up front. Then we go through the schematic design process. We have the schematic design estimated and the contractor gives us an estimate. And then we lock in our fee based on that estimate. And the percentage is whatever you determine that your percentage should be. And the way we would work it with a phase project is that we would, for schematic design, we would get paid our percentage for schematic design, which is broken down by phase. So the percentage for schematic design, we would base on the entire project, so the cost of the entire project. And then we would determine with the client and based on the breakdown of the estimate, we often ask the contractors to break it down into phases as well for us. And we would then proceed with phase one, and everything from design development all the way through construction administration would then be based on the cost of phase one. So schematic design would be based on the cost of the whole project, and just your schematic design fee would be based on that. And then we would determine phase one, and we would base the rest of phase one on the cost of what the scope of work of phase one would cost. And so that's how we do it. And then what's important is that at the end of phase one, we close out the project and we close out our agreement. We don't wait and say, okay, phase two in 2 years, come back to us and we'll start again. We close out phase one as if it's a finished project. And then when phase two happens, they come back, they bring their master plan. We pull the master plan out of the drawer. We put together a new proposal based on phase two. And there's a couple of reasons for that. One is that in 2 years or whatever, however they come back, often much longer than that, the whole world is different. Our fees are most likely different. Our process potentially could be different. Their expectations and their understanding of the project is different. They've lived in the house now for many years and have a different way of living. Very likely, phase two will be completely different when you develop it than it was 2 years ago. And so the new proposal is based on the description of phase two, but it's a new proposal and it gives us the opportunity to adjust our fee as necessary if we have increased our fees or changed the scope of the way we do things. It gives us that opportunity. So we close out at the end of phase one and a new proposal at phase two. So we do use our hybrid proposal for master planning and phased execution, and schematic design is based on the full project and phase one is based on the cost of DD through, or the phase one, which is DD through construction administration, is adjusted for the first phase scope of work. So that's how we do it. I hope that helps, Sherry, and I hope that answers your question. Thank you very much for purchasing the hybrid proposal. The cost that the proposal generates and the money that the business forms and checklists that I do, the foundation's business forms and checklists are also available on the site. The money that comes from that supports Entrepreneur Architect. I don't put that in my pocket. I put that right back into the site and build it for the community. So every time I get another notification that another proposal has been purchased, it's just more money that I can put into the business at Entrepreneur Architect and grow it. So thank you very much. So let's get on to question number three. So question number three was sent to me by my longtime friend, Bob. Bob and I went to school together, architecture school. He was one of my studio mates. And he wrote, "It would be interesting to hear from part-time architects in the Entrepreneur Architect sphere of influence. What happens when you only have 20 to 30 hours per week to work? So much out there on running a small business architecture firm seems to focus on the idea that we have to work 60 hours a week, but I suspect that there are many part-timers out there, lots of moms and dads trying to run small business while raising kids. Absolutely. No doubt about it. I love this question because although on the surface, it's about running a full-time firm with part-time hours, but in reality, it's about work-life integration. One of my favorite topics. And Anne Marie and I run Five Cat Studio full-time, but often we run into the same problems that Bob's talking about here. We raise our family and we run our firm together. You know, the studio now is in our home. Anne Marie's studio has always been in our home. She has always split her responsibilities between the firm and the family. And I've always been available as necessary and needed. One of the reasons why we started Five Cat Studio in the first place was so we could have that flexibility to raise our family and do what we need to do and be at the plays and be at the swim meets and do the things that we want to do when we want to do it. And so that's how we run our firm. And so now that my studio is also in the home, we built a new studio and moved out of our 11 years of being in a large 2,000 square foot studio in a town next to ours that we live in here, and moved it back into our house. And now we work virtual with our staff. So we are running our firm and raising our family. And I suspect, as Bob does, that we're not alone. I'm sure, in the future, I'm going to expand on this topic in another episode or write about it on the blog, because this is something that needs more attention than just one question answered. But from my point of view, people in this position really have two choices. We only take enough work that can be accomplished in the 20 hours that we have. So if we only have 20 hours or 30 hours, whatever it is, then only take enough work to do that. Then that's tough, because if you're only working 20 or 30 hours, then you're only getting paid for 20 or 30 hours. And that might not be enough. So the other alternative to that is to build a team, and then you can hire more, staff and, get hired for more work and do all the work that you want to do. So you can run a 60-hour firm in 20 or 30 hours because you have other people doing the work. All you need to do is build the systems and build a business that can run itself. So go back to the book that I recommended, The E-Myth Revisited. The E-Myth, it's by Michael Gerber, and it talks about how to build a business that allows you to live the life of your dreams, basically. Or building a business that lets you integrate your firm and your family. It talks about building systems and building guides so you can teach other people to do the work that you're doing. So maybe the 20 or 30 hours that you're working is focused on just doing the design, or it's just doing the business end of things and letting others design it and you just critique it and tweak it. So that's another solution. And by the way, the E-Myth Revisited, there's also, he does multiple, it's a whole series of books now. And a few years ago, he came out with E-Myth Architect, and I have not yet read it, but I know it's out there. But I've read the E-Myth a dozen times. I've given it away probably 50 times. E-Myth Architect would be very interesting. It's on my list. And obviously there's much more on this topic. And, I'm going to leave this one up to you guys. So I'd love to hear what you guys are doing to integrate your life, and your firm. You know, how are you, working 60-hour firms in 20 or 30 hours? How are you raising your kids? And running a firm. This is something that is a common question. I get emails and comments on the blog and tweets at Twitter about this subject every week. It's something that people are struggling with. It's something that Anne Marie and I continue to struggle with. We've worked it out, so we're running the business is running pretty smoothly. but it's not easy. It's really, really difficult. So I want to hear what you have to say. So go to the Entrepreneur Architect blog at entrearchitect.com/episode32 and leave a comment and let's have a conversation about this one. How do you get it all done, moms and dads? How do you get it all done? How are you a full-time architect and a full-time mom and dad? Let's go. Let's go talk about that one. So that was question number 3. Let's get on to question number 4. So question 4 was sent to me by Ileana. She sent me a question about the type of client that she's attracting and wanted to know my thoughts on how to manage them. So here's her question. She wrote, "Here's my conundrum. I've just started my residential design firm and I've come across different types of clients. Even within my target market, residential renovations and additions, weary of design and construction process, I'm coming across a type of client that is becoming typical all of its own. I'll call it the faster, farther, stronger, or also known as faster, faster, faster. Who is that client? It's the client that wants the condensed design process because they want to start construction in 2 months. They have no contractor in line and have no idea about the permitting process, let alone lead times for materials. They want the condensed design process, but they don't understand the design changes are necessary during the design process and should be avoided during construction process. What do you mean, 3 weeks, she wrote, was one of the questions from a potential client when I told them that if I were to work exclusively for them, I could deliver design development drawings in that period. And then I was told I was too expensive. Have you heard that before? I was basically fired before I was even hired. How do you persuade this type of client? How do you transform their faster requirement into a solid contract that will leave everyone happy? Well, we have those kind of clients contact us often, and we manage them by setting up expectations loud and clear right up front. If you want to work with us, this is how we do it. And we have a very specific process, and that process takes time. And the results they see on our website and they want for themselves, that's the reason they hired us, is because they did their search and our marketing is out there and they see the work that we do. So if they're calling Five Cat Studio and they want what we do, then this is the process that we do. And so I think truly, truthfully, Ileana, I would say the first question you need to ask yourself is, do you really want this target market? Do you really want this to be your target market? These people who don't understand the process, they just want it fast, fast, fast. They don't really want our design services. They just want our stamp. That's not a market that we really want to take. And there are plenty of architects out there that serve that market. Lots of startups serve that market. We served that market when we first started. But I think eventually you need to grow out of that market. If you do want to work that market, then you need to develop systems that accommodate their very short deadlines and set expectations very, very clearly that the services that they will receive are going to be very, very limited. Then the focus of continuously improving those systems until you become the firm that does faster, faster, faster. So you need to build a brand around serving that type of client and do it better than anybody else. So if you want that market, and there's a huge market there that's available, and you can become the brand that serves that market. And the key here is to not try to change that client. And so in your question, you said, how do you convince a client to change, or however you wrote it. But my take on that is that if you want to work in that market, you can't spend all your time trying to educate that client. I for years I did that, and I talk to architects all the time who want to educate the client. The key to a successful business is not trying to change the client, but accepting the client for who they are. So if you want that market, then you need to accept who they are and build a firm that serves that client. Don't try to change it. Accept the client and build a firm that can meet their expectations. So, and what's really interesting is that you don't really have an option. You can't do faster, 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 and cheap. If a client wants faster, 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 then they're going to need to pay for it. If they want faster, 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 and they don't want to pay for it, then they go somewhere else. And when they go somewhere else, they'll understand why they got what they paid for. So you have to stand firm, give them, if you want, give them what they want, but build systems and become the firm that does that, build a brand around it and become that firm. You know, I've found that many potential clients want results quickly because they honestly don't know what it should take. They don't understand that it should take longer. So you need to remember that you set the services you provide. They don't set the services you provide. You can't walk into a meeting. They tell you how you're going to do your business, how much they're going to charge, or how much they're going to pay you. That doesn't really work. If you're going to build a business, you decide what your services are. And then you need to market them, and then you need to sell them. And you determine that. And if the prospect is not compatible with that, then you need to move on. You need to say, I'm sorry, this is not a project that is appropriate for my firm. Maybe give them a referral to somebody who is doing that kind of work, and move on and go find a better client that does want what you have to offer. You know, truthfully, your prospects are going to adjust to the way you work and adjust to what you have to offer, or they're going to find someone else who does it their way. And truthfully, many times, that's the best thing that could happen. Okay, so that's 1, 2, 3, 4. This is the fifth question I have. This is the final question. The question is, would you publish my article? And how can I become a guest blogger at entrearchitect.com? This is in response to this week's post. Since we started the blog, I've had people constantly sending me emails asking if I would post their articles. And until this week, all guest posts have always been by invitation only. And many of those posts written by guest authors have been some of my highest ranking posts. So the great thing about articles written by guest authors is that they're written by people who are passionate and are very knowledgeable about the topic that they're writing. So I love having guest bloggers, but I always only invited people I knew who inspired me. Andrew Hawkins, his article on apps for architects is always in my top 10 most visited pages. Stephen Burns wrote a 3-part article for the Entrepreneur Architect Academy blog post series on financial management for small firm architects. It's also very, very popular, always on the top of my rankings. These posts are popular because they share information about topics that our architects, you know, our community are interested in. And so this week, I've opened the blog to guest submissions. And it's very, very important to me that the quality still remain very high and that the topics are interesting to our community. But I thought that, you know, allowing guest bloggers to submit articles, and not every article that's submitted will be published. Only the very best will be published. And I will continue writing as well. I'm not going anywhere. What it will allow me to do is open up the platform to other voices so that we can learn from other people. People who are better at certain topics than I am. We'd be able to explore other topics that I'm not capable of. Of writing, you know, informative email or blog posts on, and what it will also do, it will allow me to develop other services and resources for the community, and so by not having to write every single week, and allowing some of our community to write, the site will be able to grow, the community will be able to grow, and we'll all be able to benefit from that. So. It's really exciting to me that I'm going to have other people write. I just posted that, that article on, Sunday night, and I've already received articles, for publication, for consideration So it's already starting. It's really exciting to see what's coming through. So I encourage you, if you're interested, to please write. I have put together a set of guidelines for anyone who's interested in submitting an article for publication. You can go to entrearchitect.com/writers, and that will give you my page that I put together that gives you the guidelines and the parameters for what we're looking for. There's very specific topics and requirements that you need to meet if we're going to publish it. Again, I want to keep the quality very high and the standards very high. So entrearchitect.com/writers, you can check out the guidelines there. And send me your best work. I'd love to share your knowledge with our community. So I invite you to do that. And if you did read that article when I first published it, and I wrote, you know, there's a whole section of terms and conditions, and before the terms and conditions was a copyright section where I claimed ownership of anything that was submitted to us. I've changed that. So I want you all to know that I got some feedback from several different directions on that was not a good idea, and I agree. My intent on that was to make sure that the readers of the Entrepreneur Architect blog they're not seeing things that have already been published, and that's really my only intent. So copyright remains with the author, and we just ask that it has not been published previously anywhere else, in print or digital, before it gets published on the Entrepreneur Architect blog. And then after it's published, you're welcome to do whatever you want with it. We just want the best work you have to share it with our community so we can grow and become an influential force in the profession, as I like to say. This is the next step to doing that. And it's exciting. So that's my five questions. Five questions, five answers. And with that, I'm going to wrap this one up, but before I say goodbye, I want to say thank you. I want to thank everybody who sends me emails or mentions me on Twitter or who have liked my the Facebook page at facebook.com/entrearchitect. I want to thank you. I want to thank you for visiting this blog each week and for reading what I have to share. I want to thank you for listening to this podcast and responding by leaving comments over at the blog. I want to thank you for subscribing to my newsletter, The Entrepreneur Architect Report, which you can subscribe at entrearchitect.com/newsletter, and I write every week. Thank you for subscribing to that. I have over 2,000 subscribers now at The Entrepreneur Architect Report, and I have a 40% open rate, which is a pretty high open rate. I would love it to be 100%. But 40% is a pretty high open rate as far as I know. I also want to say thank you to everyone who's left a review or star rating on iTunes. You know, during the last few weeks, the podcast has seen almost a dozen new reviews on iTunes since I've been following up, you know, ending the podcast with the request for that. Those are really, really important, and I really appreciate the kind words and the support on those reviews and those ratings. And those reviews help other entrepreneur architects find the podcast and in turn help to build a better community. So I appreciate it. If you haven't left a review and you want to do that, you can go to entrearchitect.com/iTunes, and that'll send you to my iTunes page on the web. Just click the button that's labeled View in iTunes, and it'll open up your iTunes app where you can then leave a review for the show. And again, I really appreciate those reviews, and I thank you. And really, each of these platforms contribute to building an amazing community of like-minded professionals who love what we do and are seeking a better way in terms of running a small business. That's what Entrepreneur Architect is all about. We're architects, and we want to be happy, and we want to be successful in what we're doing. We want to serve our clients the best we can, and one client at a time, we want to make the world a better place. So I thank you all for being part of this journey that's called Entrepreneur Architect, and for making Entrepreneur Architect what it has become. So I, thank you. So I'm going to wrap it up with that. Until next week, my name is Mark R. LePage, and I am so blessed to have you guys as members of my community. And I am an entrepreneur architect. Thanks for listening.
From historic homes to modern architecture, brick is one of the most popular building materials around the world.
How to allow the house to bridge the gap between the history of the site, the approachability of this kind of architecture in this kind of neighborhood, and the sort of nostalgia of materiality for the client's past, right? And brick really started to provide an answer for that.
Hi, I'm Doug Pat, and this is Design Vault. There aren't many materials that easily blend with any style and context, but brick does just that. I've seen some extraordinary work with brick, so when Glengarry approached me about hosting this podcast, I couldn't say no.
Typically, Tudor-style houses from outside are just stunningly gorgeous piece of structure, and when you go in, it's just sad.
Yeah.
Dark. And that is not going to happen with my approach to design.
I speak with industry leaders and share inspiring stories behind their work and ingenious design.
You'll see brick that's fashioned into basket weave patterns, sawtooth patterns, what's known in England as diapering.
Doesn't sound like you knew them per se, right? They found you through relationships that you had with other.
Well, wait, Doug, there's more.
Okay.
We'll go behind the scenes to understand process and even the inspiration that sparked the design.
You know, I think we were inspired by all the factory buildings in Dumbo. I mean, that is the kind of period of significance, that early American factory building.
Design Vault by Glengarry. Visit glengarry.com/design-vault or search for Design Vault wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe now to stretch your imagination.
Attention architects and creative minds, get ready to supercharge your brand with Build Your Brand, the podcast that's unlocking the secrets of branding success for creatives. Hey there, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my friend, architect marketing expert, Jeff Eccles at Build Your Brand podcast, where he explores the captivating stories of the world's top brands and transforms their lessons into powerful moves for small firm architects and creatives like you. In season one, Jeff shares the thrilling tale of Southwest Airlines, where he dissects their journey to the summit and distills it into strategies tailor-made for you.
It's important to keep in mind that companies like Southwest compete in the real world, just like you, and face real-world challenges, just like you. You might be surprised at how similar those challenges are to the struggles that you grapple with on a day-to-day basis.
Don't miss out on your blueprint for success. Subscribe, tune in, and let's build your brand together.
You may have noticed that the very best brands in the world are also known for having somewhat unique corporate cultures. That's often the glue that holds everything together when they encounter those rough spots.
We don't do it because it inconveniences the passengers to whom we are primarily dedicated, the short haul, frequent flyer.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Build Your Brand today. Remember, no matter the size, the journey's the same. Your brand's journey to the top starts here.